Now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the past, we have received a heritage, our American heritage. And it consists of many things. It's an ideal and a way of life. It's everything America stands for, our heritage. We can repay the past only by using our heritage well today, by taking pride in the most complete expression of individual liberties, civil rights, and personal dignity. And by doing so, we'll be guaranteeing our future, for we have learned from history that unused freedom has a habit of slipping away. Of course, using our freedom makes certain demands upon us. But to the people of many countries today, these demands would constitute a gift beyond price. They mean voting in an informed way, serving on juries, taking an interest in having a voice in all the affairs of the community, the state, and the nation. All this preserves our heritage by exercising it. And by making our form of government work better at home, we strengthen democracy everywhere. We provide an example of free people governing themselves through a free government, a dynamic example of man's finest ideals at work. To every American, then, falls the task of protecting our heritage. For freedom is everybody's job.
Hey, everyone. I just thought I would step in here to give my thanks to everyone who's been listening to these detective podcasts. And I want to thank everyone who has tuned in to these detective shows. I had no idea how popular they were going to be. In fact, so popular that there's 40,000 plus listeners for each block of detective shows that I've done. And I want to thank everyone for making it possible, for listening, for tuning in and enjoying these detective shows. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Hey, are you listening?
When to find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call.
OTR Rob.
OTR Rob, calling in for your bus, 137569. Grab a pencil and a notepad and take this down.
Oh, you!
And what, pray tell, is wrong with you, F?
Oh, nothing.
Good. Now take this down. There are two radio blocks of detectives. Detective couples, which includes Nick Carter, The Adventures of Ellery Queen, Mr. and Mrs. North, and Let George Do It, all within the Jack Benny podcast network. And the other detective radio block is Popular Detectives, which includes Sam Spade, Michael Shane, Pat Nowak for Hire, and Jeff Regan, private investigator for The Lion's Eye. Enjoy all of these over on the Jack Benny podcast. I hope you got that down, Effie.
Oh, you!
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Richard Diamond, Private Detectives. This episode is from September 8th, 1949. The episode is entitled The Harry Baker Case, and I hope you're being safe. Not boring, but safe, and when you go out, you wear a mask, when you come back, you wash your hands, and I wash my hands and my face, both, especially the part that's exposed where the mask wasn't. And I hope you're doing all of that, because I want you back here next week, and the week after that, and the week after that, and the weeks after that. So it's just for selfish reasons, I get that. I'm being very honest with you. I want you back next week and the week after and all that for a number of months here. I'm trying to give you the best content, the best shows possible, and I will continue to do that because I love each and every one of you, and I don't even know you. And you don't even really know me. Just my voice. But I think it's important that we all be safe, be careful, so we can have another day together, okay? And I love every one of you for listening to the program. Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. And let's listen to this show and all my other shows, which includes Frank Sinatra and Rocky Fortune and Vincent Price and the Saint and that other guy, the fat man. No, not the fat man. Yeah, what's his face? Hey, I'll think of it. Oh, yeah. Nero Wolf. Enjoy Nero Wolf and Sydney Greenstreet in the role and whoever is playing Archie Goodwin this week. It may be somebody entirely different. Who knows? Find out who it is when you listen to all of my shows, and I'll see you all back here next week. I hope.
Here transcribed is another in NBC's great parade of new shows. Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Hello there, this is Diamond. If you happen to wake up some morning and spot something walking in front of your house and it looks like Santa Claus with jaundice, don't turn the hose on him. He's not on fire. He's just wearing the newest thing in men's fashions. They call it the bold look, and it's supposed to be the masculine answer to Dior's new look for women. It's an answer, all right. Like walking up to your best girlfriend and slicing her down the middle with a broadsword. Now, if you haven't seen it yet, just close your eyes and try and picture yourself in the bold look. Imagine walking down Fifth Avenue, very casual, decked out in a new bright purple non-shrinking suit, pastel shirt, yellow maybe, hand-painted tie and argyle socks. Got it? What do you think? Pretty bad. About the only thing I can think of that's more gruesome is that little murder I got mixed up in last week. It started in a house out on Long Island. A guy named Harry Baker was getting involved with his private secretary.
Here are the papers you wanted, Mr. Baker.
Oh, thank you, Connie. What time is Mrs. Baker going shopping?
She didn't say. This afternoon sometime.
Oh, where is she now?
In her room.
Come here, Connie.
Harry, no. Supposing she comes down.
I didn't see you last night. I missed you.
I got hold of the man you wanted. His name's Nat Fox. He wants $500 for the job.
Oh?
Well, what's the matter? That's what you wanted, wasn't it?
Connie, I had a lot of time to think last night.
And?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know if this is the thing to do.
You don't know? Oh, Harry, we've gone through this a dozen times, and I won't go through it again. If you haven't got the backbone...
Oh, my dear, you know it's not that.
No, I do not. Sick and tired of living this way. Not being able to be seen with you, watching you being pushed around by that old shrew. Oh, I'm not going through the whole thing again.
Please, Connie, can't we wait for a while? My wife's well past 60. Sooner or
later... And in the meantime, you live off the skimpy little allowance she doles out to you. No, Harry, no. I want us to live like two normal people. If you're going to start changing your mind just when it looks like we can have all these things, I'm through.
Now, Connie, wait a minute.
No! If you want me, then you've got to go through with it. Well?
You know I want you. I love you more than anything in the whole world.
Get that old biddy out of the way, or I promise you, you'll never see me again.
All right.
Oh, don't look so worried, darling. Nothing's going to go wrong. I already fixed it with this Nat Fox. He'll be in the department store the same time as your wife. Oh, Harry, think of the wonderful life we can have. All that money's going to be ours. We can go to Europe and live the way we should.
Yes, sir. No, I'm a little worried about this Nat Fox. I'll give him the $500, but if he finds out what happened, he'll be in a good position to blackmail us.
Don't you worry about Mr. Fox. He's my affair. You just leave everything to me.
Well, hello, Otis.
What do you want, Diamond?
I thought I'd drop in and see the lieutenant. Aren't you glad?
You want me to make you feel good, or do you want the horrible truth?
The truth, Otis. I'll steel myself.
You turn my stomach.
I couldn't without a bulldozer.
Very funny.
When are you going to go on a diet, Sergeant?
Eh?
You're beginning to look like Dumbo with a goiter. Hello, Walt.
Oh, no. Who's dead this time?
No, don't be silly. I just came down to talk to see how you were.
I don't believe it. Say something without corpse in it.
Your smile is like the first dawn of an Indian summer.
You said Indian.
So what?
If you said it, he's dead.
All right. If that's the way you feel about it, goodbye and good luck.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Stop being an idiot.
That's all right, Walt. I understand.
Now, come back here. You know very well I'm glad to see you.
And you think just because I come down to see you, I've gotten mixed up in some kind of a murder. Oh, a fine friend.
Now, you stop acting like that. You're a worse ham than Otis.
That did it. I'll never send you a good dead body again.
Is that a promise?
Is what a promise?
That you'll never send me a good dead body again.
Oh, want me to break the law, huh? Hold out police evidence.
Of course not. You know I was only kidding.
Just like the police force, making fun of a corpse.
I have never made fun of a corpse.
So that's what's the matter.
What?
Too serious. That's what's ruining your stomach.
Oh, now stop that. You know what's wrong with my stomach. I've been working too hard, that's all.
So the next time I find a corpse, you'll want to take a vacation. This precinct is more corrupt than I thought.
What do you mean, corrupt?
Just what I said. I find you a corpse and you won't even look at it. You want to go on a vacation.
I don't want to go on a vacation. I'll look at the corpse.
What corpse?
The one you wanted me to look at.
There you go, acting like I've gotten mixed up in another killing. Trying to make it look like the corpse is mine.
What?
Well, it's not my corpse.
It isn't?
No.
Well, whose is it? Well,
you know. You tried to frame me with it.
I did not. Don't you try to shove that body off on me. Yeah, what is it? Oh, hello, Helen. It's for you, Rick.
Thanks. Hi, baby. Hold it a minute. Walt, you better do something about that body.
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Otis, put in that general alarm. Diamond's found another killing.
Oh, wait a minute. No, Walt, it's your killing, remember?
Oh, yeah. Forget about the general alarm, Otis. I've got... Oh, Diamond.
Sure, Helen. I'll meet you at the store.
Oh.
Sure. I love you. Bye. Oh. Walt. What a funny look. You're all red. Oh. Walt. Walt, you're turning blue. Well, I gotta go shopping with Helen. I hope you find the body. Bye.
Lieutenant, I'm still waiting.
Sergeant.
Yeah, Lieutenant?
Shut up!
I don't know why I do that to Walt, but I always get such a kick out of tying him up in knots. When he takes the bait, he goes for it hook, line, and sinker. It's a good thing Helen called and asked me to go shopping with her, or he might have blown his fuse. I don't generally like the idea of shopping, but she said it was Francis's birthday, and any kind of an afternoon with Helen could always work its way into a wonderful evening.
What do you think I ought to get him, Rick?
I'll get him some shirts or something. Hey, look at these.
Rick, get away from that counter.
What's the matter? My hips too big?
Oh,
I wonder if these come in baby blue.
Rick, now stop that. People are looking.
Is there something I can do for you?
Mm-hmm.
You seem to be interested in the lingerie. Is there something I can show you?
Oh, I'm looking for something for a birthday.
Oh, well, then may I suggest a nightgown, perhaps? We have some lovely numbers.
This is for a butler.
A butler?
Yes.
Oh, then you were thinking of getting something for the lady, too.
No. Just seeing whether the baby blue went with my eyes.
Well, really?
Oh, come on, Helen.
Rick, she must think you're crazy.
5 minutes more and there wouldn't have been the slightest doubt. This is fun.
Rick.
Hmm?
That woman.
What woman?
The elderly one over there with the mink stove.
Oh, yeah.
I just saw her put a box of stockings in her purse without anyone seeing her.
You saw her?
Yes, but the clerk didn't. And she left the counter without paying.
I know.
You know?
Oh, sure. I spotted her 5 minutes ago. Not a very good shoplifter.
But that's stealing. Shouldn't we tell the manager or something?
Oh, the store detectives are sure to have her spotted.
Why don't they arrest her?
Point of law, baby. They can't put the arm on her until she steps out of the store. Now, look. She's going out the front door. Just watch.
She's out. She's just standing there on the sidewalk.
Oh, that's funny. They must have spotted her. She was too careless.
Look, that big car is pulling up and she's getting in. They're driving off.
Well, maybe the store dicks were looking out the window.
Well, I'm going to tell that clerk. I remember her description.
Oh, now,
clerk!
Helen.
Yes? Oh, did your husband decide that they did go with his baby blue eyes?
He's not my husband, and that's not why I called you.
She thinks yellow goes with my complexion better.
Oh, yes.
Now, stop it, Rick. That woman who was just at your counter.
Which one? We've only had about 600 this morning.
Now, don't be flip with me. The elderly woman who was just here looking at the stockings. The one with the beautiful mink stole.
It was beautiful, wasn't it?
Then you noticed her.
Of course. That was Mrs. Baker, one of our best customers.
Well, Mrs. Baker is a shoplifter.
Oh, you must be mistaken.
I tell you, I saw her steal some stockings.
I tell you, you are mistaken.
Oh, now, look. I was going to stay out of this, but what Miss Asher says is true. I saw her, too.
Miss Asher?
Yes.
Oh, you have an account with us, don't you, Miss Asher?
Until you started telling me I was mistaken about that woman.
Oh, just one moment. Oh, Mr. Pennywig! Mr. Pennywig!
What are you doing?
I'm calling the manager.
The manager?
Yes, Miss Asher. I would prefer to have him explain it to you.
Yes, Miss Phillips. What is it?
Well, I'll tell you what it is. Don't ever put Miss Phillips in the toy department. She's so nearsighted, she's liable to think the electric train is the 8th Avenue subway and climb on it at 5 o'clock.
I beg your pardon?
Mr. Pennywig, this is Miss Helen Asher.
Oh, how do you do, Miss Asher? I heard a lot about you.
You're going to hear a lot more.
Oh, is something wrong?
Yes.
Yes, something is wrong. Miss Asher here spotted a woman stealing some stockings, and when she reported it to your clerk here, she said she was crazy. I saw it, too.
Is this true, Miss Phillips?
Yes, sir. It was Mrs. Lillian Baker.
Oh.
I was just trying to do the store a favor, but since you don't seem to think that the customer means anything around here, I'll see that my account is closed out.
Oh, now, just one moment, Miss Asher. May I talk with you in private?
I don't see why. Come on, baby. I know a joint on Broadway where we can get things without the lip that goes with it. Come on.
Oh, please, Miss Asher. It's about the shoplifter, Mrs. Lillian Baker.
You can tell me right here.
I must rely on your integrity to keep this a secret. You see, we know that Mrs. Baker stole those stockings. She steals something nearly every day.
What?
She's very wealthy, very eccentric, and very much a kleptomaniac.
Oh.
Her husband handles all her affairs, and he's instructed us to watch her and send him the bills for the goods she steals.
Oh.
Well, can't you break her of the habit? Her husband must lock his pants in the family vault every night.
Yes. She's under a doctor's care, and he advises letting her continue, but without her knowing that anyone else has found out her secret. She's quite old, you see, and her husband assures us that discovery might be very disastrous.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm very sorry. I didn't know.
Well, I'm not. This pixie behind all the unmentionables can get a person steamed up enough to cause a minor explosion.
I was just doing my duty, sir.
Mr. Pennywig.
Now what?
Yes, what is it?
Oh, Mr. Pennywig, we've had a jewel robbery.
What?
Yes, sir. Three of our most priceless gems are missing.
Oh, dear. Mrs. Baker?
I don't know, sir. We watch her very closely when she's looking at jewelry. But 5 minutes after she'd gone, we discovered the loss.
Was it of any consequence?
Was it? $300,000 worth.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, wait a minute. Who else was in the jewelry department?
Oh, several people. I'm so upset.
Take a look over there.
Where?
Over there. The man in the wide pinstripe near the linen counter.
Excuse me, I've got to go call Mr. Baker.
Now, wait a minute.
Yes?
Maybe Mrs. Baker didn't lift those rocks. That man over there, was he in the jewelry department?
Why, come to think of it, yes.
Oh. Now, wait here.
Rick!
Hello, Nat.
Hey, what are you doing?
Now, take it easy. I just want to see what you got in your pockets.
Well, Richard Diamond. You must think you're still on the force.
Someone just lifted some stones out of the jewelry department. You still in the racket?
In a store like this? Are you crazy?
No, but I thought maybe you were. Now, let's see your pockets.
You ain't no cop. Go on and peddle your papers.
You look pretty silly with a broken arm.
Okay. Okay, you don't have to get rough. I'm clean.
Yeah, well, that's better. Now, turn them inside out.
Hey, what's going on here?
Now, meet Nat Fox, one of the better-known jewel thieves.
Yes. He was in the shop about the time Mrs. Baker was.
Oh, I've quit the rackets. I just like to look now and then.
Oh. Well, at least he hasn't got them on him. Oh. Now, what have we here?
Gum wrappers. I like to chew gum.
Ah, well, you chew a lot of it. Better call the law, Mr. Pennywig.
Or if you say right away...
Go to the devil.
What?
Rick!
He's getting away. Stop him.
Oh, relax, relax. We can always pick him up. I want to take a look at your jewelry department. Nat Fox didn't have the jewels on him, but as he did have a lot of gum wrappers, the first thing I wanted to do was to case everything in the jewelry department. It was an old stunt. The thief chews a lot of gum, palms some jewels, and sticks them in the gum. Then he sticks the gum under something, and a Confederate comes along later and scoops it up. If the thief gets spotted at the scene, he's clean, just like Fox was when I searched him. Well, I looked under everything, on everything, in everything. There was a lot of gum, all right, but no jewels in any of it.
Rick, couldn't someone have picked it up already?
Well, that's the only thing I can come up with, unless this Mrs. Baker really did steal them.
Well, the police will be here in a few minutes.
No, a clerk.
Yes, sir?
Can you remember who was in the jewelry department when you discovered the jewels were missing?
Well, this Mr. Fox and Mrs. Baker had already left. But I believe there were several women. Yes, there weren't any men, just several women.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. Come on, Helen. The robbery detail can take it from here.
Well, thank you very much for your help, Mr. Diamond. Oh, where can the police get in touch with you if they want to ask any questions?
They know me. And if you ever need any guidance, just look me up in the book on the private detective. Can't miss it. The one with the biggest ad. Helen and I got out of there just as the prowl cars were pulling up at the curb. I stuck my tongue out at a few old friends and climbed into her king-size convertible. We took a couple of turns around Central Park, and she dropped me off at the 5th Precinct and my dear old buddy, Lieutenant Levinson.
Don't you dear old buddy me. You get out of here.
Temper, temper, temper.
I will not be subjected to any more of your fiendish humor. I won't go through another one of these routines of yours for promotion.
I promise I'll be good.
Oh, no, you don't. That's the most dangerous thing you could say. Yeah, what is it?
Suicide, Lieutenant.
See? See, look what happens.
It already has happened, Lieutenant. She did it 20 minutes ago.
I wasn't talking to you, Melonhead. Now give me the dope.
You got him.
You shut up.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
Oh, not you, bird brain. Let's have the report.
Oh, Mrs. Lillian Baker jumped 3 floors from a balcony. Husband Harry Baker made the report. Port Washington, Long Island.
Thank you, Sergeant.
What, did he say Mrs. Lillian Baker?
Yes, he said Mrs. Lillian Baker. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got to get out to Long Island.
Well, let's go.
Grab my coat. Now, wait a minute. What makes you think you're coming along? And why in blazes are you interested in Mrs. Lillian Baker? If you know something, by heaven, I'll...
Walt, you're turning blue again. Come on, I'll tell you on the way. I briefed Walt on what had happened back at the store when Helen and I saw Mrs. Lillian Baker lift the hosiery. We reached the Baker estate about 3 o'clock in the afternoon and drove up a long circular driveway to the big house. The husband, Mr. Harry Baker, met us at the door.
Oh, please come in, gentlemen.
Thanks.
You'll have to forgive me, gentlemen, but I'm still a little upset. My wife was a sick woman, but I never expected her to do anything like this.
Where's the body?
Out in the garden, right this way.
Have you any idea why your wife committed suicide, Mr. Baker?
Oh, yes. There's the body. You don't mind if I go back inside, do you?
I want to ask you some questions, then you can. I understand that your wife was a kleptomaniac. Is that right, Mr. Baker?
Why, yes. How did you know?
Mr. Diamond here saw her steal something from the store today.
You mean the jewels?
No, I mean the stockings. Did she steal the jewels?
Why, yes. I found them under her mattress after the store called and told me of the loss. She was a sick woman. She's been stealing things for years, but she didn't think anyone knew about it. I had an arrangement with the stores that I could take care of all the things she took, but those jewels were too much. I had to confront her with the evidence. And she broke down completely when she discovered we knew her secret.
Harry. Oh.
Wow.
This is my private secretary,
Lieutenant Levinson. Richard Diamond.
Oh, Miss Constance Loring, Lieutenant Levinson, Mr. Diamond.
How do you do?
Well, pretty good. I'd like to tell you about it sometime.
Don't dead bodies make you a little nervous, Miss Loring?
What?
Miss Loring was here when my wife jumped. She's already gotten over the initial shock.
Oh.
She's been in the library calling some of my firms to tell them I won't be at work for a while.
How long has she been here?
Why, a All afternoon, she's been taking some dictation.
With her hat on?
Oh, well, you see...
Forget it. Tell me, did your wife jump from that balcony, Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Three floors. About a four-foot railing around the balcony.
If you think that there's been any foul play, you can check with her doctor. He'll tell you she could easily take her own life if her secret was discovered.
I'd like to talk to him. What's his number?
Evergreen 54469. Dr. Leonard Bischoff.
Thanks.
While you're calling him, Rick, I'd like to see those stolen jewels, Mr. Baker.
Certainly. Right this way. Phone's right over there on the stand, Mr. Diamond. Would you open the safe of the lieutenant, Connie? Mr. Loring.
Dr. Bischoff, please. Richard Diamond. Yes. Hello.
Dr. Bischoff, this is Richard Diamond.
Here they are, Lieutenant. Now, you can easily see why I wouldn't, or should I say, couldn't pay for them.
Is the store coming over to pick them up?
No, I told them I would bring them down.
What's this all over them?
Well, I don't
know. They're all sticky. Got something all over them.
That's probably gum, Walt.
Gum?
Yeah, the kind you chew. By the way, Baker, you were right. Dr. Bischoff says your wife was a sick woman, but he didn't think she'd care to such extremes.
Well, we never know what we will do under such stress.
No, I guess we never do. Walt, can I use the car for about an hour? It'll take you that long to clean up things around here.
Well, you got something?
Yeah.
Mr. Diamond, if you think...
I don't think, Mr. Baker. I find out. Walt.
Yeah?
Bye. I went out fast and climbed in the prowl car. I grabbed the two-way radio and put in a call to Sergeant Otis. He gave me the address I wanted, and 10 minutes later, I was rolling up in front of an old brownstone where Nat Fox, the not-so-ex-jewel thief, was now living. I went up and knocked on his door. Well, there was nothing like finding out. Well, what do you know?
Baker's residence.
Let me speak to Lieutenant Levinson, dear.
He's right here.
Hello.
Walt, I'm over at Nat Fox's place. Now, don't say anything.
Right.
You remember I told you I spotted him right after the theft and shook him down?
Yeah.
Well, he's through giving the police department headaches.
What do you mean?
He can't explain the two bullet holes in his head. I called the station and had them send over the wagon, then I took off for the department store. I was sure that Mrs. Baker hadn't jumped, and I was pretty certain that whoever had knocked off Nat Fox was in on the Baker killing.
Oh, hello again, Mr. Diamond. Have you heard we found out who stole those jewels?
Nat Fox?
Why, no, it was Mrs. Baker after all. Mr. Baker called us back and said that he'd found the stones.
Oh, well, that's dandy. Well, I'm going to take your clerk who was in the shop at the time of the robbery.
Take him?
Yes, I want him to identify someone. I'll have him back in about an hour.
Oh, well, I suppose it'll be all right. George?
Yes, sir?
I want you to go along with Mr. Diamond here. He wants you to identify someone. It's official, I guess.
It's official, all right. When you point out a thief and a killer, it's always official.
Rick, what took you so long?
Walt, this is the clerk from the department store where the jewels were stolen.
How are you? What's he here for?
I want him to see if he can identify someone. Where are Baker and his lovely secretary?
In the library.
Come on. Now, look, George, I want you to stand outside this door until I call you. Then I want you to come in and see if you've ever seen anyone in the room besides myself and the lieutenant.
I'll do my best, Mr. Diamond.
That's all I want. Come on, Walt.
What are you up to?
Surprise. Well, hello.
Why, hello, Mr. Diamond. Come in.
Thanks. How are you, Connie? I see you've taken off your hat.
You're very observing.
I sure am. Why did you kill your wife, Mr. Baker?
What?
All right, I'll word it a little different. Mr. Baker, why did you kill your wife?
Are you insane?
Everybody asks me that. Maybe I should see a good doctor.
Maybe you should.
Like Dr. Bischoff, maybe?
He's the best in town.
Mr. Diamond, you're being ridiculous. I was with Mr. Baker when his wife jumped.
You shouldn't have said that. Makes you an accessory.
What do you mean?
I mean you're lying if you try and tell me Mrs. Baker wasn't killed.
She jumped.
Over a four-foot railing? Yeah.
What are you getting at?
How old was your wife, Mr. Baker?
Oh, Close to 70? Why?
Pretty good health, physically?
Why, yes, of course.
You say you were in the house and neither one of you gave Mrs. Baker a push off that balcony, Connie?
Of course.
Are you sure you weren't out putting two bullets in a cheap thug named Nat Fox?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Rick, what is this?
Who has the money in the family, Mr. Baker?
Why, my wife did.
And who does it go to in event of a death?
To me, naturally.
Naturally. Walt, Mrs. Baker couldn't have taken those jewels. She was too much of an amateur. Helen and I spotted her swiping stockings at 50 paces. Whoever did lift those rocks was a professional thief.
Well, why couldn't my wife have hired Fox to do the job?
Who said anything about Fox doing the job?
Why, you did.
Harry!
Shut up.
I just said that Nat Fox was dead and that I thought Connie killed him.
I didn't kill anybody.
You were just coming back from it when you bumped into us. You hadn't even taken your hat off and you were still carrying your purse.
I was just going out.
Let me see that purse.
You stay away from that.
Anything in it?
Well, no gun, but she probably threw it in the river. Nice handkerchief.
I'll sue you, Diamond.
Look at the handkerchief, Walt.
It's sticky.
Give me that!
Sit down, lover.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I thought there was a chair there. It's sticky, all right, Walt. That's gum.
And gum on the jewels. She must have picked them up.
Yeah, right after Nat Fox stuck them somewhere.
Oh, you're both crazy. She was here with me all day.
Yeah. Now, George.
Yes, Mr. Diamond.
Who's this person?
You just relax. I want to find out what's going on, too.
Well, George?
Yes, sir. That girl was in the shop right after Mrs. Baker.
That's a lie. I wasn't. I didn't kill anybody.
One of you hired Fox to steal the jewels, and then you picked them up and brought them to Baker here. You killed Fox to keep his mouth shut.
I did not.
Yes, she did.
Harry!
We might as well tell them. You're right, but I didn't kill my wife. I can't get first-degree murder.
Why, you dirty old man. You did kill her. You told me you were going to. You were up there and you pushed her off.
Try to prove it. She jumped.
No, she didn't. There was a 4-foot railing all around that porch.
Well, she could have climbed it.
That's right, Rick.
She could have, but you should keep in touch with her doctor, Mr. Baker. When I was in the store today, I spotted your wife with a cane.
A cane?
Yes. Dr. Bischoff said she didn't want to tell you about it because she didn't want you to worry.
Didn't want me to worry about what?
She had arthritis, Mr. Baker. Dr. Bischoff said she could barely walk upstairs, let alone climb over a 4-foot railing. He also told me that under the conditions, her age and everything, she couldn't have lasted more than a year. You were in too much of a hurry. Okay, Walt, you run with the ball from here on. I got a date.
You didn't tell me what you did after you left me this afternoon.
Oh, I just fooled around with Walt for a while to kill the time. By the way, what did you finally get for Francis?
Oh, I got him something in the newest fashion. It's called the bold look.
What?
It was pretty ghastly, but he loved it.
Oh. Tell me what you got him.
Well, a purple suit.
Non-shrinkable.
Yes, how did you know?
It figured. Go on.
A green shirt. One of those hand-painted ties. Rick, where are you going?
Oh, I can't stand it.
Oh, that's wonderful. What is it, Rick?
What is it? I thought you were supposed to be bugged on South Pacific.
Oh, is that what it's from?
Yep. Goes on next to closing, right after Fink's Mules.
It does?
You better get those tickets again. See what it's all about.
Well, give me a preview.
You'll hate me in the morning.
There's an answer for that.
Yeah. Younger than springtime, are you? Softer than starlight, are you? Warmer than winds of June or the gentle lips you gave me? Gayer than laughter, are you? Sweeter than music, are you? Angel and lover, heaven on earth, are you to me? And when your youth and joy invade my arms and fill... Hey, what's that?
What?
That, standing in the corner.
Oh, Francis. That's Francis, Rick.
What are the odds?
Oh, yes, sir. It's me.
Now, Rick, be careful what you say. That's the new bold look.
Well, turn it off. It's getting bilious.
Don't you like it, sir?
Now, Rick.
No. Well, Francis, I think it's... Yes, it certainly is.
I think it's rather gay, don't you, sir?
The gayest.
Oh, my goodness, I forgot something.
Does it look like a stomach pump?
Forgot something?
Yes, miss. The outfit wouldn't be complete without them.
Well, hurry up. I'm going to black out any minute.
What did you forget, Francis?
The spats.
Spats?
Yes, sir. Seersucker spats. And they were lovely.
You have just heard transcribed Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg. Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Lorene Tuttle, Joseph Kearns, Peter Leeds, and Joe Forte. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards. Dick Powell soon will be seen in the screen version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company. Now, Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
When it comes to employment, I am what you might call a connoisseur. I have jobs which are strictly out of this world. The last one I had nearly put me there permanently. I am instructed to report to the 9th Avenue Arena. When I get there, I find the horse follies of 1954 is all over the place. The legit title is Grand National Rodeo. And I find the boss, an old guy with a hat you could stew tomatoes in, hanging over the rail, watching a cowboy ride on a bull, which must have just sat down on a hornet. You, Colonel Larrabee?
Stuck to that critter's back like he had a pot of glue in his hip pocket.
Excuse me, I'm looking for Colonel Larrabee.
He's leading his hobbling in the car.
That boy's the best frame of bull rider I've seen in 20 years. Hey, get that critter away from him. Doggone it, how many times have I told those broken down tramps to get him away from him? Look out!
He's clear, Pop. He's up over the fence rail.
Oh, I gotta tell them hands to move in quicker. Don't look good when a rider gets gored by the bull. It's bad publicity. Gets the Humane Society down on you.
I don't mean to interrupt, but are you Colonel Larrabee?
I am. Who are you?
Rocky Fortune. The agency said that you needed an administrative assistant.
Administrative assistant? I told that agency I wanted an errand boy, somebody from the West.
Sure, that's me.
You from the West?
Yeah, 11th Avenue. You get any further west than that, you're in the Hudson River.
Ah.
Oh, come on, Pop. You just want somebody to run errands. He doesn't have to qualify as a top hand.
I suppose not.
Yeah, what's keeping that next rider?
Well, Mr. Fortune, I'm Jane Larrabee. Colonel here's my father. If you're going to work for the rodeo, you'll just have to get used to him. He's so western, he makes Wild Bill Hickok look like a sophomore ambassador.
Now, Janie, don't you go running down the west. All right, young man.
You mean I'm hired? Okay, what am I supposed to do?
Anything I tell you to. Mostly run errands and answer the telephone for me. The show's on, I'm all over this barn. I need somebody to keep me in touch with the office. Well, Prentice?
Sure. I'm the tail on your dog.
Yeah? Yeah. All right, Fortune. I guess I'm stuck with you. You can start right now. You go down to my office and bring up the tally on the box office receipts for today's matinee. It's on the desk.
Sure. Where's your office?
Down those stairs over there. My name's on the door.
Reet, Dad, Reet.
Huh? A westerner.
Ah. I have to pull myself away from the fence rail, and I hear the snap as my eyes peel off Jane Larrabee. She's one of them tall dames, dressed like the rest of the cowboys in Levi's and fancy shirt. But somehow the shirt turns out fancier than it was originally intended, and she manages to look somewhat different from Gary Cooper in similar circumstances. The colonel's offices are down a long hall which looks like the Canal Street station of the Broadway subway. I open the door and walk in. For a second, I think I'd forgotten to open the door. Something clobbered me behind the ear, and I go down for a long count. And just as I'm beginning to come up for air, I hear somebody coming down the corridor. I open one eye and spot a pair of bow legs that could walk over a beer barrel without noticing it.
What are you doing down there?
Oh, my head.
Where's that list I sent you for? It's been close to an hour.
I was slugged.
Oh, well, come on into my office and I'll... What happened in here?
Looks like somebody tried to turn the desk inside out. The guy that slugged me...
Uh-huh, I figured that might happen. Some low-down coyote tried to rob me.
Maybe we better call the cops, huh?
No. If Labby can't handle his own affairs without calling on a sheriff, he might as well fold up. Besides, it'd be bad publicity for the show.
Colonel, it's almost time for you... Hey, what's this?
You're glad you come along, Ringo. Some pat rack slugged Fortune and busted into my desk. Fortune, this is my top hand, Ringo Durham.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Colonel, I told you not to leave all that money around if you'd only put it in the bank.
I don't hold with no banks. I want my money where I can lay my hands on it.
Did you have much dough stashed in the roll top?
Well, we had the receipts for the matinee, $25,000.
That ain't hay.
Pop, they're holding up the entrance key. What's the matter?
Somebody broken in the colonel's desk.
Pop, did they get the money for the note?
Now, don't you worry, Janie. There's evening show yet.
But it's due at midnight. If you don't have $45,000, ACA takes over the show.
Who's ACA?
Amusement Corporation Associates. They got a lien on the show.
Pop, why couldn't you put the money in the bank?
I begged him, Jane.
Oh, I know you did, Ringo. Pop, ACA's been trying to take over your show for 10 years now.
Now, don't you worry, honey. I ain't going to let them pies and prairie dogs get a hold of my show. I built it up from a Wheel of Fortune booth at the county fair, and I ain't going to lose it now.
But the money, you won't be able to make the payment. Pop, what are we going to do?
Jane, you know I've got enough saved up. You can always count on me. I'd be pleased to help you.
I don't have to.
What?
You think I'm a bleating maverick still wet behind the ears? The money wasn't in my desk.
Wasn't?
Got it right here.
Where?
You didn't think it was that miserable wolf bait we'd been eating in the cafeteria put this lump on my middle?
You mean you're carrying the money with you?
In a money belt. Any man gets it off me, gotta get my pants first. And ain't a Labby been caught with his pants down since the Oklahoma land rush?
What happened in the Oklahoma land rush?
Son, that's a long story.
It's a lucky thing you ever busted in here, didn't know that.
I still think we ought to call the cops.
I don't need no tenderfoot posse. I carry my own policeman, two of them. Ringo, you can tell every waddy in the show that I got my money where I carry my lunch, and I'll blow a hole through the first man that goes for it, big enough to drive a yearling bull through. I can take care of myself.
I hang around the rodeo all day, and there's a certain atmosphere around the rodeo, and it gets stronger as you go downstairs where they keep the horses. I strike up a conversation with a bunch of the wild horse jockeys, but all of them who aren't called Slim are called Tex, so I can't tell one from another. And this is very confusing to me, and I'm beginning to wish that I'm back in the East where people speak English and the ladies wear high heels. Just before the evening show, I'm standing outside the colonel's office when I hear voices inside.
Colonel, what do you know about this maverick Fortune?
Nothing. Why?
Well, that's a mighty interesting coincidence. You sent him down to your office, he's gone an hour, and there's an attempted robbery.
But he was dry gulched.
Well, that's what he says. Maybe he heard you coming and laid down and put on an act.
I don't know.
I'd feel a lot safer if you'd let me take that money over to the bank.
Don't you worry, Ringo. I'm keeping it right here. I just want to get my hands on any skunk that tries to grab my poke.
How about Fortune?
I got my eye on him. One move out of line and I'll cancel him like a check.
I figure I better keep my nose clean, so I spend the evening sitting alongside of Jane Larrabee where I can get a good look at her profile, which is very rewarding, all the way down to her spurs. She's telling me about the rodeo, and I'm beginning to figure it's a plot thought up by the hospital across the street to drum up trade.
And then when the rider falls off the bull, they try to edge the critter away from him.
Well, suppose the bull don't edge.
Well, you see that dummy hanging in the middle of the ring?
With the cowboy clothes on?
Uh-huh. Sometimes if you run behind that, the bull can't tell the difference, so he tosses the dummy on his horns. Bulls are nearsighted.
Yeah. One of them one day is going to get bifocals, and you're all going to be in trouble.
Well, I got to get along now. I'm entered in the bucking bronco contest tonight.
You mean you ride them four-legged pogo sticks?
Sure. Would you like to try it?
Thank you, no. I'm too nervous. I'll stick to jumping in front of the express trains on the 8th Avenue subway. Later on, I watch Jane Larrabee wrestle an 800-pound steer down to his knees in 12 seconds, and I make a mental note not to try anything in a taxicab with his doll. In that case, I figure the odds would be that she'd have me down, roped, branded, with a notch cut out of my ear before the cab meter could run up 35 cents. I head down below the main arena to the old man's office to find out if he had any messages for me to run. I open the door and walk in. Colonel, I came down to... Holy smokes. Colonel. Dead as a mackerel.
Put up your hands, stranger.
What? Oh, it's you. Listen, Ringo, the old man...
I can see.
He's been shot.
Yeah, you used his own gun, didn't you?
What are you talking about?
Now, don't you step this way, mister.
Now, wait a minute. Just a minute. I walked into the office, and there he was.
Well, that's your story. Looks like I caught you just in time. Now, hand over the money.
I haven't got any money. I didn't do it. Listen, while you're standing there making like the Lone Ranger, the real killer's probably halfway to the Bronx.
Oh, no, he ain't. He's right here.
Ringo, what's the matter? They're calling for you down, but... What is it? What's happened?
Jane, it's your pa.
What do you mean? Pop. Pop, what is it?
He's dead.
Oh, Pop. Pop, no, no.
He was shot with his own gun.
No!
You're going to pay for this fortune.
But I didn't do it. Why should I?
$45,000.
I didn't take the money. You can search me.
Well, maybe you didn't have time. I look in his money belt and don't move. I can shoot out a candle from horseback.
Oh, Pop!
The money belt's still full.
That's what I tried to tell you.
You just didn't get a chance to take it. Hey.
What is it?
This isn't money in here. It's newspaper.
Newspapers? Well, the old man must have been trying to fool the killer. He must have hid the money somewhere else.
I guess he did fool the killer, didn't he, Fortune?
Listen, you bow-legged lunkhead, I didn't shoot him.
Jane, do you want me to take it?
Oh, please, Ringo. I'd better go upstairs. The show... I can't stay here. I don't want to think. You do whatever you think is best.
All right, Jane, don't worry. I'll take care of it.
Look, I hate to repeat myself, but you better call the cops.
Don't need no cops. We'll take care of this our own way.
You can't do that.
After the show, me and the boys will give you a nice fair trial before we string you up.
You can't do this. This is New York City. I want a habeas corpus.
Well, there'll be a corpus, all right. Colonel Larrabee was the finest old man you'd ever want to know. There isn't a hand in this show that wouldn't take a chance of swinging to make sure his killer got what was coming to him. Now, right after the show, we're going to fit you for a nice long necktie. Now, get moving.
Ringo, again, I tell you, why don't you send for the cops?
Call some smart city lawyer. Might find a way to weasley out of this.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping.
Get in here.
What is this?
A box stall. We'll keep you in here nice and cozy till I round up the boys. I'm gone.
Hey, there's something in there. A horse.
Oh, that's Sam, the educated mule. He won't mind. Go on.
All right, quit pushing.
And don't tickle Sam on the side. That's what makes him kick.
Thanks a lot.
We want you in one piece till we can get a hold of you. Now, if I was you, I'd start practicing.
Practicing what?
How to sing Bury Me Not on the Lone Prairie.
I am sharing a lovely one-room apartment tastefully decorated with antique feed bags and harness straps with luxuriant wall-to-wall straw. My roommate is Sam, an intelligent-looking mule who gives me the fishy eye. Now, look, Sam, I don't know you, and you don't know me, so let's leave it that way. Now, you stay over on your side, and I'll stay over on mine. Well, you got sinus condition, too. You know, pal, you'll have them tonsils out. Now, look, Sam, all this is very pleasant, but I got to figure where some way to get out of this before that crazy bunch of cowboys decides to try an 18-foot necktie for size with me on the end of it. Hey! Let me out of here! Anybody! Let me out of here! I got a right to make one phone call. Hey! Hey!
What are you doing in there, Mac?
At last, a human voice. How did you get in here without a Western dialect?
All right, Mac, stick up your hands before I blow your belt buckle out through your spine.
What?
This ain't no fountain pen. I got stuck in your ribs.
I've been betrayed by a Brooklyn accent.
What are you, Punchy? Where's the dough?
What dough?
The old man's dough, the 25 G's.
How should I know?
You've been with him all day. Come on now, bright boy. Talk. Where did he stash the dough when he stuffed that money belt with newspaper?
How did you know he had newspaper? Never mind. I can guess.
Now, you're real bright.
You knocked him off.
Look, I ain't got much time. I'll give you three, and then I'm going to let you have it.
You wouldn't dare shoot down here. You'll have the cops and the joint on your heels in a minute.
You kidding with all them horse boys firing blanks upstairs?
You got a point. All right. I'll tell you where the dough is. Come on. You see this drinking fountain over there?
Yeah.
Behind it, there's a loose brick.
The water fountain?
Yeah, look over the top.
Yeah. You keep your hands up where I can see them here.
Sure, sure.
I don't see no brick.
Lean over the top.
Yeah, where?
Here. I slam my foot down on the fountain pedal, let him have a shot of ice water and a kisser, and then I'm off running with a clear track.
Hey! Hey, you! Hey! Come on back here, you!
I figure if I stay in the Carter, I'm a setup for a slug in the back, so I take the first right turn, head up a ramp and out a little door. I slam it quick behind me, which is a mistake. Right smack in the middle of the arena, and coming my way fast is about 2,000 pounds of cow with a built-in pitchfork between the ears. I give him a quick sidestep, and the bull puts on the brakes and skids to a stop 10 feet away. Hey, Ferdinand. Ferdy, come on, Ferdinand. You want to smell a nice carnation? Attaboy, you go down the other end and I'll meet you there in 20 minutes. Nice, Ferdinand. Don't get sore, baby. Don't get sore.
Rocky! Rocky, don't move!
Who's moving?
Stay still! A bull won't charge if you stay still!
That's your story. How does he feel about it?
Don't move! The riders will edge him away!
I ain't got time to wait, honey. Ferdinand quits pawing the ground, shifts into first, and starts. This kid's strictly hydromatic, and he must be doing 50 when he goes past the place where I was. He pulls up short, looks around a little confused. He can't find me, which is not surprising, because I'm swinging back and forth across the arena on the dummy, which hangs in the middle of the ring. On one end of the swing is the bull, and on the other end is Rango, which is no improvement.
Rocky, hold on. Hold on. We'll get you out. Whatever you do, don't let go.
Get me off this dummy.
Bull doesn't get your fortune now, will you? Ain't getting away this way.
Somebody get me off this dummy. I'm getting seasick. Here I have this next waltz, Max.
Drop off over here. They got the ball at the other end. Go ahead, drop. Rocky, let's go.
Okay, here I go. So long, Max. It's been grand. Unfortunately, I make a small miscalculation and let go on Rango's end of the swing. He picks me up and dusts me off with his hand, which he happens to have rolled up into a fist at the time.
You rat. Don't you get away.
Listen, Apple Knocker, wise up. The real killer's right downstairs.
What are you talking about?
A short, fat guy from Brooklyn.
Oh, you're lying to me, you sad.
I tell you, he told me he killed the old man. Now, come on, we can get him before he gets out of the building.
Okay. But if we don't find him, we're still going to see you fitted for a real tight collar.
Let's get going. Don't trip over those spurs.
I don't see no unfortune.
He might have gotten away. Wait a minute.
What?
There he is, down the hall. Come on. That's where you shoved me into that box store, right around this corner.
He's gone.
Couldn't be. I saw him. Wait a minute. Look, the door of the box stall. It's moving.
You say that polecat's got a shooting iron?
Yeah, it ain't as big as that slide trombone you carry, but it's for real.
You better let me handle this one. Now, stand back.
Be my guest.
I'll kick open the door.
Ready?
Now! Drop that gun! All right, Fortune, I got him.
Yeah, that's him, all right. Hey, he's still moving. We better get an ambulance for him.
Why bother?
Well, it just doesn't seem friendly this way.
Help me.
All right, Mac. Take it easy. We'll get a doctor.
No, it's no use. Dirty rat.
You go get a doctor, Fortune.
Wait a minute. He's saying something.
Dirty rat. Hired me to get money. Then he...
Who did? Who hired you?
Then he shoots me down.
Then he means that
Fortune,
you
just ain't a lucky hombre. If he died like you should have, you wouldn't be in trouble now. Don't move.
You hired the killer.
I didn't tell him to kill the old man. Just wanted the money so he couldn't meet that note. And he would have had to come to me for the money.
You were going to take over the show, huh?
I'm going to.
Not if I can get to the cops, you ain't.
Well, that's why you ain't going to. I figure I killed one man here in self-defense. I might as well make it two.
You were afraid this hood would talk, huh?
I wish we like umbers like you, strong, silent, and dead. Okay, Fortune, here it comes.
Oh, Rocky, are you all right?
Janie.
Rocky, what's going on in here? Who is that man?
The one on the floor is the guy who killed your dad, and the guy with the can under my ribs is the man who hired him to do it.
Ringo?
Fortune, I'll kill you for that.
Guess again. If you do, you'll have to kill her, too. And something tells me you ain't got the courage, pal. You're through, Ringo. Why don't you give it up?
Not yet. I'm getting out of here, and Janie, you'll come with me.
No!
Ringo, you ain't got a chance.
Janie's my chance. Anybody comes after me, and she gets it, Fortune. Now remember that before you go calling the cops.
Ringo tucks the girl under one elbow and gives me a straight arm into the straw with the other. The door slams, the lock snaps, and I'm back in housekeeping with the mule. This time he's nervous and lets fly a pair of heels at my head. Hey, look out! This gives me an idea. I figure I can't kick the door open, but the mule can. I climb up on top of him because that's the safest place. Line him up with the door and tickle him under the left hind leg. Nice work, Sam. Now hold still while I get down. I said, let me get off. Now, let me get... Cut it out, Sam. Let me off, Sam. Where you taking me? Sam heads down to Carter like a three-year-old coming down the widener chute at Jamaica. I guess I'd better stay on until he slows down. So I bury both hands in his mane and go along for the ride. We hit the sidewalk and I spot Ringo pulling Jane to a taxi down the block. It's obvious that they went that away, so Sam and I start after it. This is Sam's idea, strictly. Now, a runaway mule has been a little unusual on 9th Avenue since about 1911, I guess. So by the time we hit 46th Street, there's a traffic jam and a horse pulls up between a beer truck and a taxi cab. And I fall off just as the cab door opens.
Rocky! Rocky!
Get back in here.
Well, Rover boy.
Go to the cab door, Fortune. I'll plug you like I plug...
Okay, I'll close the door.
Oh, a hand!
All right, Ringo, now I got the gun. Oh, how do you hold this thing with one hand? You ain't going nowhere now. Not New York City in a traffic jam. Get out, Ringo.
Rocky, he was trying to take over the show.
I know.
Well, we'll lose it anyway. We haven't got the $45,000 to pay the note.
That's easy. It's right where your father hid it.
But we don't know where.
I do. I asked Max.
Max?
That dummy that's hung over the arena in the bull riding. He's got 45 G's stuffed inside his shirt.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast included Dan Riss, Marion Richman, Don Diamond, Tony Barrett. Tonight's script was written by Ernest Kinoy. Andrew C. Love directed. now to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Did I ever tell you about the time I conducted a sightseeing tour at the museum? Man, they got dead people and sarcophagi lying all over that place. Not that I'm squeamish about a bunch of old mummies, believe me, but when they tried to embalm me, that's where I drew the line. I'll tell you about it next week. See you around.
Visit with Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, unknown to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of Modern Crime is now transcribed for radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as The Saint.
Going on here.
This is my car here.
Whoa.
No.
Hey, cut it out. What's the idea? Now let that man alone.
Look, you keep out of this, buddy, or I'll... Well, it ain't the same.
It's euphonic, but slightly ungrammatical, Mac. Now, what's the disturbance?
They drew up alongside of my car. Him and the other fella. They said, get out. We're taking your car.
Why, Mac wouldn't do a thing like that. Now, would you, Mac?
Nah. Of course not. The old man's nuts.
What Mac would do if he coveted his neighbor's jalopy is slug him with a piece of lead pipe and drive off.
Yeah, so good night. I'll get this.
Now, wait, Mac. You could satisfy my curiosity a little. Why should you want to steal this gentleman's old automobile when you've got nicer, newer ones to choose from?
Yes, ask him, mister. Ask him. Yeah, ask me, Saint. Go ahead. I'm going to satisfy a little curiosity of my own.
I didn't think you had any, Mac. What shape does it take?
I always wondered how you'd look dead. Good night, all.
Good night, Mac. Be seeing you.
You let him go.
Yes, he convinced me that I should for now. There's nothing like a .32 in the pocket of a known thug for winning an argument. Did you say there was another fellow with him?
Yes. Run off when he heard you coming. It was the same fellow tried to buy my car yesterday.
Someone tried to buy this car?
Oh, sure. This fellow tried to buy it. And there was a woman made an offer, too.
You mean you actually refused?
I ain't selling until I find out why they want to buy it so bad.
The fellow who tried to buy the car, do you know his name?
No, he looked like a gentleman until...
Until you found him consorting with felonious intent with our just-departed friend, eh? Tell me, was he well-dressed, an annoying little mustache placed just over the sneer he wears for a mouth?
Well, yes. Say, how did you...
That's easy. Our friend Mac does piecework for him. Fancy Dan Turner is his current alias. But I see you don't keep up with such things.
You're going to tell the police?
Later, perhaps, when there's something to tell them. Right now, I've got a great thirst that needs quenching. A thirst for knowledge.
Huh?
Yeah, what's your name and where do you live?
Collins. 302 East 8th Street.
Mm-hmm. Now, put your car in cold storage, old-timer, and take care of yourself. Something tells me this is Rat's Night Out. Hello, Smitty. Back making book, I see.
You got the wrong joint, Saint. Take a look around. I run a pool room. You interested in a horse?
No, a man.
Well, like I said, Saint, you got the wrong joint.
His name's Mac. He hangs out here. Now, where is he? In the back room?
I'm the Three Monkeys, Saint. Deaf, dumb, and blind. The only Mac I know is a truck.
Oh, then if you don't mind, I'd like to look in your back room and see if he's parked there.
I mind.
But you won't even know, Smitty. You're deaf, dumb, and blind.
Oh, have a heart, Saint. I ain't got no back room. Besides, last time you dropped in my place, a lot of my customers started patronizing elsewhere.
Including you, Smitty, remember?
I've only been back from the Gray place a week, and I ain't forgetting it. Oh, come on, Saint. Be a good guy. Beat it, huh?
No, Smitty. Let him stay a while.
Hello, Mac.
I was hoping you were smart enough to go home and get some sleep.
How could I sleep with you out roaming the streets, Mac? You know how I worry.
Yeah, too much. What does he want, Saint?
You. Why, Saint?
I want to talk with Fancy Dan Turner.
What about...
Now, let's not be coy, Mac. It doesn't become you. I want to ask Turner why he's trying to steal a jalopy from an old man.
Well, what do you know? I got a surprise for you, Saint. I'll take it to him.
The boys say you're looking for me, Saint.
The boys are right.
So you found me. So?
I understand you're interested in a certain old car.
So what? Probably the Smiling Irishman is, too.
A broken-down 1929 sedan seems a little slow for a fast man like you, Fancy Dan.
Well, maybe I like to go slow enough to read the billboards when I drive. What's it to you, Saint?
It depends on what it is to you, Turner. What's on the fire?
You are. There's a handle with care sign on this deal, and I don't want just anybody cutting in. You're a fowler-upper.
You've been stepping high and fancy-free too long, Turner. You're beginning to irritate me.
The feeling's likewise, Saint. Only I got more than fingers in my fist and you haven't.
It's a nice gun you're so bravely wearing, Turner. It must be a pretty big pot to change a small-time con artist like you into a fire-breathing gunman. Big potatoes, huh?
Yeah, plenty big, Saint. So big I wouldn't hesitate to shoot at the slightest move. Am I clear?
You couldn't be clearer if you were a day ordered by the Chamber of Commerce.
Good. Now, it ain't a palace, Saint. It's just the back room of a pool parlor, but please stay and be my guest.
Okay, well, for a little while anyway. Where are the boys?
Out.
They're wasting their time. Collins won't sell his old wreck. Some old men are stubborn. And Collins seems like a hard man to intimidate.
Well, that all depends on who's doing the intimidating, Saint. Now, Mac's a chowderhead, and Smitty's even worse, but put the two boys together, and you'll get a job of work done.
Dan, I've adopted old man Collins as a friend.
Ah, how big are you?
Yes. You know how I feel about people who push other people around, Turner? Especially when the guy getting the shoving is a friend.
You know, if I had a glass of beer, I'd cry into it. Sit back and relax, Saint. The boys will be back with what they want after soon enough, and maybe then I'll let you go home.
You mean they're coming back with the car?
Well, maybe not the whole car. Sit back and relax. Hey, relax. Hey, what are you doing?
Sitting back with my chair to the wall, Turner. You want me to relax, don't you?
Yeah, I...
Hey, let go of that cue stick.
As my old grandmother used to say, Turner, there's nothing as relaxing as a game of pool. Particularly with a hoodlum's head as the cue ball. Collins, open up.
You wouldn't be from the police now, would you?
No, I'm no more a policeman than you are, old man Collins.
Come in and be welcome, then.
Where's Collins?
The old man? He's here.
Where?
Behind the sofa. But if you're of a mind to look at him, make it a quick look.
Dead?
Very.
How?
Every way. Beaten, stabbed, and tortured. Maybe even shot, for all I know.
Yes, and for all I know, maybe you've got a gun with an empty chamber, for all I know.
Bless me, no. Me business doesn't allow it.
Just what sort of business are you in, Irish?
The name's O'Brien.
Ah.
When a job is pulled, and the police go after the boys who pull it, I make an end run and go after the swag. Or at least part of it.
Oh, I see. What's the swag here? Collins' wallet?
Not unless there's 400 grand in it.
400? Oh, no, I'm afraid you'll find the old man a few cents short. Who killed him?
Not I.
How do I know?
You don't.
You're right. What brought you here?
Why, I'm here about the old car, of course.
You want to buy it?
Certainly, don't you? Say, maybe you're not being cute. Maybe you really don't know about the...
About what?
Well, now, I'm greatly relieved. When I first saw you come through that door, I said to myself, O'Brien, here comes some more competition. This year not. I'm relieved, laddie. Greatly relieved.
Turner is competition enough, eh?
Yes, but Turner and his ugly ducklings are nothing compared to...
Who?
In time. I got here just a minute before you, laddie. The old man was dead when I arrived. Beyond that, I know nothing.
Get down. O'Brien.
Competition. Getting worse. All the time.
I'll call the doctor.
No. Thanks, laddie. Lay off this frolic. He'll get you next. You're gonna die, mister. You're gonna...
O'Brien, the old man's car, what...
Well, I guess I'll have to try another angle. This one's pretty dead.
Awaken Mr. Ritchie as you requested, Mr. Templar. You'll be right down.
Oh, thank you.
I hope the fire isn't too serious, sir.
Well, it's serious enough to awaken Mr. Ritchie.
Oh, here he is now, sir.
Well, which plant is the fire in? Who's responsible? How big is the damage?
Oh, the fire isn't in any plant, Mr. Ritchie.
What's that, then? Then where?
Inside of me. I'm burning up, and I need your help.
How dare you sneak your way in here 3 o'clock in the morning by telling me there's a fire? Look here, who are you?
Simon Templar.
Oh, yes. The saint. I've heard of you. If you have business with me, Mr. Templar, I suggest you phone my secretary for an appointment. Meanwhile, there's no subject on earth can keep me from going back to bed.
Not even the subject of $400,000, Mr. Ritchie.
What do you know about it?
Nothing other than that it was stolen from you, Mr. Ritchie.
That happened 7 years ago. The criminal, John Quayle, was caught, tried, and convicted. Now, if you'll pardon me...
Quayle worked for you, I believe.
He was my head accountant.
And the money was never found?
No. Quayle drew 20 years in the penitentiary. He never revealed where the money was hidden. Until the day he died.
Died?
Yes. 2 weeks ago in prison. Huh. And now, Mr. Templar, if you don't mind, I need my rest.
I won't detain you much longer, Mr. Ritchie. Just one or two more questions.
Well?
Did Quayle have a wife?
Yes, he did.
If he knew he were dying in prison, it's quite possible he made an attempt to get word to her, to tell her where the money was hidden.
He may have made the attempt, but he couldn't possibly have succeeded. He was too closely watched.
Oh.
After all, $400,000 is a lot of money. A lot of money.
Yes, you could almost buy a second-hand car with it.
If I hadn't been fully covered by insurance, my firm would have gone under in the face of a loss that large. And now, Mr. Templar, if I might ask a question.
Certainly.
Why this sudden urgency? This 3 o'clock in the morning business.
An old man was tortured to death. Then a fellow named O'Brien, who came calling on the old man, was shot to death.
But before
he was killed, O'Brien told me he was tracking down $400,000 that had been stolen.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and some checking back over how many people have ever had that amount stolen from
led
them.
Led you to me?
Yes.
I wonder what I've led you to, Mr. Templar.
I wonder, Mr. Ritchie. I wonder. Mrs. Quayle?
What do you want?
Several things, Mrs. Quayle.
Like what?
A murderer.
You've got the wrong apartment, mister.
An old automobile.
No sale. Anything else?
Maybe you'll buy this, Mrs. Quayle. Collins was murdered a little while ago.
Collins?
Hmm.
Oh, the old man. Why?
Someone wanted his car. Someone who evidently couldn't wait any longer for the newer model.
So?
So I saw Collins' car in your garage, Mrs. Quayle.
Maybe you better come in after all, mister. But come in careful.
Careful enough?
Keep those hands high. Yeah. I don't like you, mister. You're nailing together a frame and you're trying to put my picture into it. Collins sold me that car.
When?
Tonight. I could have bought a Cadillac for cheaper, mister, but I wasn't in any position to haggle.
Yes, I know.
What do you know? That's what I want to find out.
I know that Collins' car, the car, is worth about $20, but it's something else is worth in the neighborhood of $400,000. You know that's an awfully nice neighborhood.
Nice and exclusive. Chiselers aren't invited to move in.
I've been gathering that impression all evening. Well, what have we here?
You name it.
An acetylene torch, welder's mask, a few chisels, a hammer, steel wire. Either you've gone to work for Henry Kaiser, or the hand that customarily rocks the cradle is going in for rocking a safe.
I had to go into a hardware store to make a phone call, and I just couldn't leave without buying a few things.
How fortunate you didn't make your call in an establishment that sells steamrollers. Yeah, I see you have a set of license plates.
You see too much.
From Collins Jalopy, aren't they? These license plates. So that's how Quayle smuggled out his mess.
You're getting awfully close to a bullet in your head, mister. Give me those plates.
Shh, there's someone at the door.
Stay where you are. I'll see who it is.
Better not take the license plates with you.
Yes?
Oh! Mrs. Quayle!
Oh!
Mrs.
The devil! The devil! He got the plates?
Yes. Yes, he got them.
Don't let him. Oh, catch him there.
Where? Where?
Where Johnny worked. Stop. Before six.
Mrs. Quayle. Collins, O'Brien, and now... Now I have three reasons for wanting to meet a certain party.
Taxi! Hey, taxi! Taxi!
They don't stop sometimes when it's so early in the morning, Saint, because they're on the way back to the garage.
Well, what brings you out so early, Mac? Looking for a drunk to roll?
Just looking for you, Saint. Just looking for you. See here what I got in my hand?
Oh, there goes that coy streak in you again, Mac. All right, so it's a gun. Well, what does it want me to do? Come, go, turn handsprings, quote Shelley, play the bassoon? You have to speak for it, Mac.
Very funny. Look out, it shouldn't speak for itself, Saint. I ain't the gun, one you should get in that there car.
Yeah, you have a most persuasive way of offering a fellow a lift, Mac.
Yeah, a lift. Right now, it's a lift. Later on, it may grow into a ride. Come on.
Where are we going, Mac?
Back to our little gray home in the rear of the pool room, Saint. Fancy Dan Turner wants he should thank you for showing him a new trick.
Oh, it really isn't necessary.
He feels like it is, Saint. He feels like it is. Got a couple of tricks he wants to show you.
Sounds like fun.
Come on, into the car, Jim. Turner's waiting. He's got very little patience.
Nice to have you back with us, Saint. I missed you.
From the looks of that bandage on your skull, Turner, I'll bet you wish I'd missed you.
Not now, I don't, Saint. It's a nice feeling having you here, knowing that I owe you something. I pay my debt, Saint.
I pay off.
Yes, I know. O'Brien was paid off. So was Mrs. Quayle. Paid off with lead checks.
They're dead?
Oh, now save that innocent expression for the jury, Turner. You'll need everything you've got.
Well, when were they killed, Saint?
Okay, I'll stooge for you. They were killed an hour or two after I so abruptly left you before.
Oh, well, I'll have to find another pigeon, Saint. My alibi's fat.
How fat, Turner?
City Hospital. Having Remember the Saint embroidered where a cue stick hit me. And Smitty and Mac were there, too, to see me through it. Hospitals have records, Saint. We're clean. We're clean.
Huh. Then you've got a competitor you don't know about, Turner.
Yeah, looks that way. For a job that was supposed to be as simple as this one, I got too many competitors. I wonder how come.
Who fingered the job for you, Turner? Who told you Quayle got word out to his wife about where the money was?
I got nothing for you, Saint.
Smitty, wasn't it? Smitty just finished a stretch up the creek. My guess is he ran into Quayle, maybe shared a cell with him.
No. It was in the jail hospital they met. Smitty worked there. Quayle was dying off his nut. Smitty made him talk.
Yeah. And Smitty, not being mentally suited for solo work, spilled the pitch to you, Turner, for a price, of course, for money on the line.
Yeah, 10 G's to buy in on a 400,000 job. But what are you driving at? What are you picking Smitty's bones for?
I was just wondering, Turner, how much O'Brien paid Smitty for his slice of this exclusive information, and how much your other competitor shelled out, the one who happily goes around killing people.
What do you mean?
If you ask me, Turner, your pal Smitty is the sort of rat that even rats on rats. He sold Quayle's secret 3 times that we know of.
Hey, thanks for handicapping it for me, Saint.
If you're really grateful, Turner, you can return the favor by telling me what time.
It's 5:15 in the morning, Saint, but you ain't going nowhere.
I have a date to keep before 6, Danny, with your competitor.
Yeah, Saint, that's what you think.
Maybe not, Danny. What do you say we play a little pool while we're waiting for the boys?
Get away from that pool table. I ain't playing any games with you, Saint.
Well, maybe pool was the wrong game. How about a game of pitch and catch?
What?
Yeah, I pitch like this.
Ow!
And you catch it like that. Hate to leave you all by yourself there in the side pocket, but like I said, I have a date to keep. Well, Mr. Ritchie, get enough sleep despite my interruption?
I wasn't really asleep when you called on me, Mr. Templer.
I know, Mr. Ritchie. Your hair was a little too carefully combed for a man who's been suddenly awakened and told he's having a fire.
You're very clever, Mr. Templer.
But not clever enough to catch you before you committed 3 murders. Well, you're Smitty's silent partner, huh? See what low company's gotten you into, Ritchie?
Yes, I see. $400,000 buried in the siding of this elevator shaft. And with the help of this acetylene torch, it'll be all mine. A very ingenious fellow, Quayle. And to think the money never left this building.
Hmm. The place where Johnny worked. Yes, he was ingenious. It was very smart of him to use his prison job making automobile license plates as a means of smuggling out the information to his wife. How did he do it, Richie?
Very simple, Templar. There's an extra piece of thin metal in this particular plate, forming a sort of pocket. And inside the pocket, a note on cigarette paper telling poor Mrs. Quayle how to get the money. Of course, once he managed to tell her the number of the license plate, well, the rest was easy, wasn't it?
Yes. All poor Mrs. Quayle had to do was ask the Motor Vehicle Bureau to whom the plate was assigned. Mr. Collins, in this instance.
Poor old fellow. Mr. Temple, would you mind joining me here in the shaft, please?
Hmm?
Yes, right on top of the elevator. I'd like to keep an eye on you while I finish burning out this metal partition. You see, I've only until 6 o'clock when this elevator is switched on downstairs.
Oh, well,
Come, in the shaft, please.
Well, really, I
have a gun, Mr. Templer.
Oh, well, that makes it official, then.
There we are. Careful, Mr. Templer. I wouldn't want anything to happen to you. Anything accidental, that is.
You know, it's funny. I've known you such a short time, and I have exactly the same sentiments towards you. I've never been astride the top of an elevator before, Richie. And we're right near the top of the shaft.
Yes. I don't mean to worry you, Templar. But when this elevator power turns on in a few minutes, it will rise to the top before it descends.
How's your treasure hunt coming, Richie?
Almost finished. One last strip of metal to cut away and the partition will come off. Then we'll decide your fate, Mr. Templar. Your future. Here goes. A last blow. It's there. It's there. I see it. $400,000 in currency, Templar. Think of it. Think of it.
You think of it, Richie, and also think of how much blood was spilled on it.
Preaching, Templar? You? I never thought. What's that?
The elevator, Richie. Maybe it came to work a little early today.
My money. My money.
Come on, Richie. Come on, get off.
No, there's still some money left here. I want it. I want it all. All.
Come on. We've got to get off. Jump, Richie. Jump.
No, my money. I must save the money.
Richie, you fool.
All right. I got it.
Yes, Richie. You saved your money, and you saved the state some money, too. I'm sure you didn't plan on saving the cost of your execution.
You have been listening to another adventure of the Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. And now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
These immortal words of Ovid, translated from the Latin, express quite well indeed the justice of our Mr. Ritchie's fate. Nor is there any juster law than that the contrivers of death should perish by their own contrivances. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
Was written by Michael Cramoy. Our cast included Laureen Tuttle, Barney Phillips, Tony Barrett, Fred Howard, and Dan O'Herlihy.
The music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. The Saint is a James L. Saphir production and was transcribed and directed by Thomas A. McAvity. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer, Merrill Ross. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. And those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. There's no other end. But they never learn.
They all knew he was aboard the yacht when it exploded and sank. And everybody called his death an accident. That is, everybody except the corpse himself. He said it was murder.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Well, if you hadn't guessed, that was my hint for who's playing Archie Goodwin this week on The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe. And if you haven't guessed by now, it's Gerald Moore, who started out in college taking French and ended up somehow getting into radio. I think he just had a natural voice for it. I remember him a long time ago. I think it was 1940, he was on the Jack Benny show. And because of his voice, man, it really stood out among everybody else. It was almost shocking to hear Gerald Moore's voice on a comedy program, especially a popular comedy program like the Jack Benny show. But he was on there, and it was amazing because it, like, his voice shook the room. It was so good, so clear, so perfect in every way, in every syllable. And it just, I think it just threw the whole show up to have him on there. But he was, his voice was really impressive compared to everyone else on the Jack Benny show. It was amazing. Anyway, enjoy this Nero Wolfe with Gerald Moore as Archie Goodwin. I think it lasts for two, maybe three shows before he gets kicked off. Anyway, enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell means mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. You want Mr. Wolfe to what?
Mr. Wolfe will do nothing of the sort, Archie. Mr. Wolfe is thirsty.
Hold on for a moment. The bottle opener's in the left-hand drawer of your desk.
Thank you, Archie.
Mr. Wolfe, I've got a man named Denby on the phone. He wants you to umpire a card game. The
man is insane.
He's offering a fee.
The answer is no. I know nothing of card games, nor do I wish to learn.
Okay. Well, the answer's no, Mr. Denby. Sure, I'll ask him again. After he finishes the beer he's working on. Goodbye.
People appall me. The fantasies they indulge in. Bah, what on earth made that maniac think I might consent to preside at a card game?
Well, seems he expects one of the players to be death.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the bulkiest, balkiest, smartest, and most unpredictable detective in the world. That chair-born genius, Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
Mr. Wolfe would not attend, but the card game went on anyway. At the home of a Mr. Stephen Denby.
Jean?
Yes?
Acosta? Mr. Piper? I think we're ready to begin, eh?
I'm ready.
Yes, Jean, you always are.
How I like that remark, I'll have to decide later on.
Please do. DeCastro?
It's all right with me.
And Mr. Piper?
I brought a deck.
No, as host, I shall supply the cards.
Before we play, I examine them, yes?
Of course. Here you are. Chuck?
Yeah, Mr. Denby?
You will remain outside the door until called. No one is to enter this room under any circumstances.
Got it.
Lucasta?
The cards look all right.
Thank you. Now then, shall we make things absolutely clear?
You mean, should you make a speech? I don't mind.
But make it short, eh?
I shall. The four of us seated at this table are joint owners of the Candy Club, a rather successful institution devoted to the sale of food, liquor, entertainment...
And the gambling.
And games of chance. For some time now, we have all resented sharing the profits. Some of us have attempted to buy out the others.
Denby, you needn't babble on. No one wants to sell. We know that.
True, true, Mr. Piper. Which is the reason for this little game of cards. One hand shall be dealt to each of us. A hand at poker. Whoever wins gets the club. The others retire as gracefully as they can. Agreed?
That's why we...
Agreed.
Very well. The cards are shuffled. I'll place them in the center of the table. Lucasto, would you like to...
I cut.
Good.
If nobody minds, I'll cut them too. After Mr. Lucasto.
Nobody minds. Happy now, Mr. Piper?
Let's get going, huh?
Very well. Unless Jean would care to...
We're all crooks here, which sort of cancels out any funny business with a card.
Very well. We shall all draw a card in turn until five cards are drawn by each player. Shall we start, Jean?
Sure.
Lucasto?
Okay.
Mr. Piper?
Yes, of course.
And myself. We just keep going in rotation.
This is fun.
Fun? No, no. There's too much money which rides on these cards.
That's what makes it fun.
Would you mind keeping quiet? I'm nervous.
We all are, one way or another. I think we all have our five cards now.
We all got them.
Very well, then. In the same order that the cards were dealt. Jean?
A pair of threes.
Lucasto?
Nothing.
Mr. Piper?
Kings. Two.
The lights!
Piper. Well, what?
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Hey. Hey, I don't like to seem stuffy, mister, but will you take your elbow out of my back?
I'd be delighted to, Mr. Goodwin, but it's not my elbow.
I don't care if it's your tibia maximus. Just take it away.
Chuck wouldn't like that.
Well, we have company. Mind if I look around?
Keep right on walking, pal. Well,
that would be Chuck behind me, huh? And you are...
My name is Denby. You may remember it.
Oh, yeah. You phoned a couple of hours ago about a card game. Now, look, just what is your boy poking in my back?
I think it's a 38.
You're not sure?
It might be a 45.
Chuck, is it loaded?
Make a funny move, pal, and you'll find out the hard way.
Yo, wait a minute. It's just a passing curiosity. Where are we going?
My car. Get in.
If you insist, I guess you do. Okay.
I'll drive, Chuck.
The car bulletproof?
No, that's hardly necessary. Chuck shoots first.
Well, that's a saving, I guess. The only thing is, I hadn't figured on taking a ride. I told Mr. Wolf I was going for a walk. He disapproved,
You're
but...
going for a ride.
Isn't that a little corny?
Now, there's a minor difference. Usually the guest, shall we say, is killed at the conclusion of the ride. In this
Let's
case...
Let's not make the difference too minor. Huh?
You will survive the ride. It's what comes afterwards that might kill you. You see, Mr. Goodwin, my friends and I have a little mystery to solve.
You want me to solve it?
No. We want Mr. Wolf to solve it. In order to do so, he must leave his house and come to mine. He has to in order to find the solution quickly.
Why?
Neither my friends nor myself have any desire to improve our acquaintance with the police. Therefore, we want the mystery solved before the police are even called in. Hence our need for Mr. Wolfe. Hence our detaining you.
Detaining is a pretty word in the circumstances.
Now, this is my home, Mr. Goodwin.
Oh, well, I don't like the architecture. I think I'll stay out.
Get going, pal.
On second thought, Mr. Denby, what makes you think Mr. Wolfe is going to leave his house and come here?
You. Unless he does so, he will lose you. Forever. The door, Chuck.
Okay.
Mr. Goodwin, may I introduce you to my associates in business and in poker? To your right, Mr. Locasto. A charming but impulsive fellow.
Hello.
He's only the stooge. Where's the fat fellow?
In time, Locasto. The lovely lady whose back is to you is Jean. Jean something or other. She's always changing her name.
Hello.
Hello.
And the gentleman facing you is Mr. Piper.
How do you do? Is he exclusive or just... Hey, he's wearing his red carnation a little low, isn't he? Over his heart. Except that's no carnation.
That, Mr. Goodwin, is blood. Lifeblood.
Archie. Oh, pal, he's always taking walks. Come in, the door is unlocked.
Are you... Yeah, you're Wolf.
Having made a magnificent discovery, suppose you remove your hat?
No, come on.
I beg your pardon?
Mr. Denby wants to see you.
Mr. Denby can see me here.
Here ain't where he wants to see you.
Here, at the risk of minor monotony, is where he'll have to see me.
Don't you want your boy Goodwin to keep on living?
No one has ever been able to discourage him.
Mr. Denby will.
Ah, Archie's in custody?
No, in Mr. Denby's house under a gun.
I don't have to believe that.
Take a look at this.
Wallet. Archie's wallet. I shall accompany you. And permit me to warn you that if Mr. Goodwin has been harmed, nothing short of murder will satisfy me.
It's getting late. Wolf isn't here yet. Maybe he doesn't worry about you, Goodwin.
Well, he could have been delayed. Maybe an orchid needed a pollen transfusion or something. Besides, only the good die young.
Then you must be very, very good, Archie.
That remark I didn't care for.
We sit here and wait for the fat one, but in the meanwhile, the police...
The police will come when we notify them.
But they will not like the delay we make to notify them. I say we waste time. I say the fat one will not risk coming.
You say entirely too much.
Is that so? Maybe I kill you myself.
Picasso, put that gun away.
Yes, darling, Archie should have a chance to live. Not long if Wolf doesn't come.
Stop looking so pleased.
Are you afraid to die, Archie?
Yeah, well, I'm not looking forward to it. It's so final. Besides, I didn't eat a hearty dinner and... Oh, the Marines have landed.
Who is it?
Chuck, with Merrill Wolf.
Let him in. Shut the door, Chuck. Stay outside.
Archie?
Hello, Mr. Wolf. Oh, am I glad to see you.
I regret I cannot say the same thing. Blast you, why couldn't you stay at home instead of taking those confounded walks? I warned you it'd be dangerous.
Yeah, but Mr. Wolf, it wasn't the fresh air that got me. It was Denby.
Mr. Wolf, I knew you wouldn't come here without some sort of pressure. I thought the method I used would be most effective.
Would you really have killed Archie if I hadn't come?
I would have had no choice. I would have been stuck with a witness to an unsolved murder.
Suppose I cannot solve it.
I should be forced to apply the same logic to two witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Wolf, you really came here to save my life, huh?
Nonsense. I came here for a fee, Mr. Denby.
I have a check for $1,000 already made out.
Clear it up. You forget. I left my home. I traveled unprotected through the streets of this city, exposed to motor accidents, to fresh air, too. You offer me $1,000.
Will $2,500 do?
Barely. Archie, will you take the check? Now, I presume you want me to find who killed the gentleman at the table, the one facing me, huh?
His name is Mr. Piper.
The name is no importance. Will you all sit at the table in the same position you were at the time of the shooting?
Of course. Jean, Custer.
Good. Now for a look at the wound. The lights, I should imagine, went out for a while when the shooting occurred.
They went out?
Yes. Of the three of you at the table, which one had the best motive for the murder?
We all have the same motive. The club.
Helpful. There was no one else in the room at the time?
No one.
The door?
Locked, with Chuck on guard outside of it.
So much for that. The windows, I notice, are closed. They were closed when the murder took place?
They were closed.
The window panes are all unbroken, which eliminates the possibility of the shot being fired from outside of them, unless one of them was raised and lowered.
That wouldn't have been possible. The windows are secured by catches.
Archie, will you check that?
Okay, Mr. Wolf.
I shall for the moment assume that the windows are neither lying nor untrustworthy. Does anyone remember anything unusual occurring at the time of the shooting?
Well, someone whispered Piper just before the shot.
Indeed. You all heard that whisper?
We heard it.
Man's voice or woman?
Well, I can't say. A whisper doesn't reveal much of anything.
The windows weren't open, Mr. Wolf.
Which leads to...
The fact that it had to be one of us in this room. But which one, Mr. Wolf?
The murder weapon. Yes. Has it been moved?
Nobody touched it. It's laying on the floor where it was dropped.
Interesting. If you look closely, you would observe two oil spots staining the rug between the revolver and the lady's chair, indicating... who sat at the right of Mr. Piper?
I did. Why?
Mr. Danby.
Yes?
If I were you, I would turn Mr. LeCastro over to the police.
You are a liar.
I warned you about that gun, LeCastro.
Was it necessary to shoot Mr. LeCastro?
In the arm, yes. He was reaching for a gun. He'll live, however, till the police take him away. What do I tell them?
You could point out the angle of the wound. As you noticed, Mr. Denby, the bullet entered Mr. Piper's heart from the right.
Yes, so it did. Therefore, whoever sat to his right, well, that was LeCastro.
Archie, you have the check?
I have it.
We may as well leave.
Mr. Wolf, you're sure LeCastro shot Piper?
I have indicated the evidence. The rest will be up to the jury. Come, Archie.
Jean.
Yes, Archie.
Now that my life expectancy has increased, what are you doing tomorrow night?
Archie?
I got a scram.
Lancaster 7583.
I'll be ringing your bell. Oh, Mr. Denby, you better do something about LeCastro's arm or he won't live to be executed. You see, the executioner likes them warm before he chills them. The old homestead looks very nice, Mr. Wolf.
Yes, Archie, you should stay in it more often.
Yeah, but you never get to meet babes like Jean that way.
You never get kidnapped either. Nor would I have had to leave my home in order to rescue you.
Yeah, well, you earned a nice fee, fast.
Indeed?
You seem doubtful about it.
Positive, Archie. I know. I have not as yet earned my fee.
Huh? You mean Denby might not turn LeCastro over to the cops?
Of course he will. The trouble is, you see, LeCastro did not murder Piper.
No? He just thought a bullet in the heart might be good for Piper's rheumatism, huh?
As it happens, Piper suffered from asthma. That's beside the point.
Fine. Mr. Wolf, I'm going to take it for granted that you know who did kill Piper. I'm also going to take it for granted that you won't tell me until you're ready. But why turn LeCastro over to the police?
Two reasons, Archie. First, I had no proof against the real killer. Secondly, we had to supply a scapegoat in order to be permitted to leave the Danby home. You were unarmed, helpless.
Go ahead, rub it in.
Nonsense. It was an interesting problem. I enjoyed it.
It was, huh? Well, to me, it's still in the present tenses. Which reminds me, as old Dr. Titmouse said, there's always a future tense. And in that future tense, Jean.
No, Archie.
Oh, Mr. Wolf, stop. That girl's got a love for blood that appeals to the ghoul in me. Besides, did you notice what she does to a dress?
Archie. I was merely about to say that I have no objections to your dallying with the girl.
Oh, I don't believe it. My ears need overhauling.
I objected only to the future tense. Why not call her now?
Yeah, well, I won't pretend I understand this sudden enthusiasm on your part about my love life. Probably there's some foul, scheming motive at the bottom of it. But who am I to look a gift horse in the mouth? Now, let's see. Her number was...
Lancaster 7583, of course.
This is the most beautiful bar and grill I've ever seen, Archie.
Drank, you mean?
What?
Never mind.
All right. Archie, did anybody tell you you were beautiful, too?
Well, a girl here and there has mentioned it.
Oh, were they liars?
Nah. Tell me, Jean, how did you ever get into the gambling den racket?
Because I'm a crook.
Well, I suspected that, but...
I want another drink.
You've had enough.
I want another drink, and when Jean wants another drink, no gentleman who is a gentleman...
Jean, get down!
Oh, let me go. I don't want to climb under the table.
You'll stay under here until the barrage stops. I guess the war's over. All right, Jean, get up.
No, now I'm here. I like it. I'm going to stay here for months and months.
Jean, do you realize that somebody just tried to kill you?
And I thought you had such a nice, honest face.
No, not me. Somebody out in the street. I don't know why, but Mr. Wolf will. Come on, pour yourself together and let's go see him.
The nice fat man? All right, I like him.
You do? Why?
Because he'd make such a big corpse.
Is that you, Archie?
Plus Jean.
What made you think I wanted her here?
Well, she's one of your fans. She thinks you'd make a lovely corpse.
What was the reason for bringing her here?
She was shot at. Did you expect her to be?
I expected her to be killed. That's why I sent you to her.
It didn't occur to you I might be killed, too?
It did. I was willing to take the chance.
You were willing? Oh, Mr. Wolf, Jean's a little under the weather.
Splendid. In vino veritas.
Watch your language.
I mean that people in their cups often tell the truth, a proverb of some antiquity. Who shot at you tonight, Jean?
Well, I don't know. I didn't see.
Has it occurred to you that you might just as easily have murdered Piper as not?
But Lucasto killed Piper. You said so yourself.
I lied. Furthermore, why the attack on you if Lucasto was the murderer?
Well, I don't know.
Did you also not know that Lucasto escaped from jail earlier this evening?
You're making that up.
Why should I? Mr. Denby turned him over to the police, but Lucasto managed to get away before being jailed.
That's not cricket.
Incidentally, Mr. Denby will be joining us at any moment. I expected you to bring Jean Archie. Therefore, with the exception of Mr. Piper, who is resting in the morgue, and Mr. Lucasto, who is at large, we shall have all the participants in the card game. With them, perhaps, we can deal a new hand, Archie?
Okay. Maybe it's the morgue to tell us Piper escaped. Oh, wrong again. Come in, Mr. Denby.
Mr. Wolf, I'm upset. I heard over the radio about Lucasto's escape. He'll try to kill us all.
Why?
Well, because we can testify that he murdered Piper.
Truly.
I beg your pardon?
Lucasto did not kill Piper.
But you said that he did.
The only evidence against Lucasto was the angle of the entrance of the bullet that lodged in his heart. May I remind you of the whisper you all heard in the darkness preceding Piper's death?
The whisper that said Piper?
Precisely. We must assume, then, that Piper turned his body in the direction of the whisper. Therefore, the angle of the wound would be wrong for Lucasto, but the correct one for...
Whoever sat opposite Piper.
I sat opposite him, but that doesn't mean I killed him.
Wait, you must have. Once he turned, the bullet must have come from opposite him. Only possible way. That means you, Jean.
No, it's a frame.
May I interrupt for a moment? Mr. Denby, if our present analysis is correct... It must have been you who whispered to Piper. Did you?
I hadn't thought about it before, but...
Denby, you're lying.
No, he's not lying. Continue, Mr. Denby.
Well, when the lights went out, I wanted to tell Piper something. He turned to me, and that's when he was shot.
Archie, you've taken all this down.
In my prettiest shorthand, Mr. Wolf.
Good.
I don't know why you're doing this, Denby. Maybe you think if I take the rap, you'll get the club. But remember, Lucasto's still free. He's gunning for all of us. But it'll be you. Especially you, he'll want. Maybe you can talk a jury into sending me up for something I didn't do, but you won't live to gloat about it.
Oh, shut up, Jean. You killed Piper and...
Who's that?
This is, of course, the murderer of Mr. Piper. No comments? Archie, the door, if you please.
But you said I was the one who...
What kind of idiocy is this?
Archie, I said the door.
Okay, but shall I ask him in or sock him?
You will act as the situation demands.
Yes, sir. But for once, I'd like to know what the situation is.
Raise him, Goodwin, and keep him that way. Now back up into the living room.
I don't back up good. My gears...
You want it here?
Never mind. I'll strip a gear.
Archie, what are you doing?
Just what the situation demands, backing up. In case your knowledge of armaments has failed you, our little friend Chuck here is pointing a .38 revolver at me.
Won't save him from the chair.
Maybe not. But it could give me quite a pain in the stomach.
Chuck, what do you think you're doing?
You double-crossing louse.
Gentlemen, if you
so
please.
So you thought you'd run to the fat dick and pin it all on me, huh, Denby?
You don't know what you're talking about. We haven't even mentioned you.
You sure of that, huh? Then why did Wolf phone me and tell me you were about to sing?
Wolf phoned you?
Yeah. Said you were getting ready to feed me to the electrician up the river.
Oh, he was making a stab in the dark, Chuck. Trying to start something.
That's so, Wolf?
Archie, will you read Chuck your notes about Mr. Denby's statement regarding the whisper?
Well, that doesn't mean... It could be misunderstood.
Read me the notes, Goodwin.
Here it is, I quote. When the lights went out, I wanted to tell Piper something. He turned to
me
and...
That's all I need to hear.
Chuck!
You were selling me out after hiring me to knock off Piper.
You dumb gunman! Now you've given Wolf what he wants, a confession. I was trying to pin it on Gene.
That's what you say now. It's kind of late, though. Too late for you.
No, no, oh!
Goodbye, Mr. Denby. Nice shooting, Chuck.
Stay put, Goodwin. The rest of you, I'm leaving.
The police wouldn't approve. But let me have your gun.
Huh? Wise guy. You know something? I've been thinking.
Can you think?
If I was to knock off you and Goodwin, me and Gene could split the club between us and nobody'd ever know who killed Piper.
Very whimsical, Chuck, but if you don't mind...
Archie, don't be an idiot.
Well, if I have to get shot, I prefer it to happen when I'm moving forward.
Archie.
Okay, come and get it, Goodwin. March right up nice and easy and take it.
I'm coming. Would somebody mind telling me why I don't fall down?
Phooey.
I've been shot. Well, that's not the way to talk to a man who's just been... Hey, Chuck is lying down. He...
Is he dead?
Well, there's been a mistake. I didn't shoot him. He shot me.
Archie, stop blabbering. Neither of you shot the other. As a matter of fact...
I shot the Chuck.
Lucasto.
Lucasto, Archie?
Well, I thought he escaped.
No, I'm no crazy. I do not escape. The fat one, he phones the police to tell them how I'm innocent.
Yes, I had the police announce the escape, however, for reasons of, shall I say, strategy?
Well, on account of there are no bullet holes in me, you can say whatever you like, Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Archie. That announcement helped heighten the tension our murderers were under.
And then they explode. The fat one, he says to me, Locasto, wait in the next room. Watch careful. Maybe there's trouble. I watch. And now? Now there's no more trouble.
Well, place looks a lot tidier now with all those bodies removed, huh?
Indeed. Archie,
I'll get you the bottle of beer. But first, make with an explanation.
The case was crystal clear, Archie.
Maybe, but I'm no crystal gazer. Sure, I know. Denby had things arranged in advance with Chuck in case anybody held a better hand than his own. Piper did. So Denby whispered to Piper after kicking the light switch and set him up for a shot by Chuck from the doorway. The angle would provide evidence against Lucasto.
True. However, we had only Denby's word for it and Chuck's that the door was locked.
All right. We know, but you knew before Denby and Chuck blew up, huh?
The oil spots on the rug, Archie?
Well, they only showed the gun had bounced when the murderer threw it away. Spattered oil, very well-kept gun.
They showed more than that. Where were those spots in relation to the gun? Think back, Archie.
Spots in relation... Oh, sure. They were between the gun and the door.
Therefore, the gun must have been thrown from the door. Bounced twice, staining the rug before reaching its final destination.
I get it now. That told you who'd fired the gun. But there wasn't proof enough, so you set up a nice atmosphere of suspicion and had the boys give each other away. All right, Mr. Wolf, you're a genius, and you may have your beer.
Thank you, Archie.
As for me, I'm not a genius, but I remember a phone number. So if you'll excuse me, Mr. Wolf.
You're excused, Archie.
Thanks.
But before you call that number, may I remind you that Jean is a girl of macabre tastes who appeals to the ghoul in you.
Sure you may, but why bother?
In order to be able to warn you that a ghoul and his money are soon parted. Good night, Archie. Ah.
I've been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman program. In the cast were Gerald Moore as Archie Goodwin, and Betty Lou Gerson, Jay Novello, Howard McNear, Barney Phillips, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you The Case of the Calculated Risk. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC.